Hi, and welcome to the About Her show. I am Sangeeta Relan, an educationist, a writer, and a lifelong learner. I also run an e-magazine for women. This podcast is about trailblazing women and their journeys. Women who have broken many a barrier, many a stereotype to realize their potential. If they can do it, so can you. Welcome to this week's episode, where we embark on a journey with Ruchira Mittal, the visionary founding editor of Quill Club Writers, as she shares her remarkable life story. Throughout her diverse experiences, Ruchira has donned multiple hats, armed with nothing but confidence, hope, and unwavering positivity. Join us as we delve into her captivating narrative, exploring the challenges she's faced and the resilience she's exhibited. Ruchira's journey serves as a testament to the power of embracing life's obstacles with open arms. Get ready to be inspired and uplifted as we uncover the extraordinary tale of Ruchira Mittal. Hi, Ruchira, and welcome to the About Her show. This show is about women achievers, who we call women trailblazers. Women who had dreams, who had ambitions and aspirations, and then they worked towards fulfilling those dreams. And over here, we give them a platform to talk about their work, share their journey, their successes, failures, all of them. And we also want, you know, at the same time, the listeners, the women who are listening in, to get inspired by their journeys. All right, because sometimes we see that a lot of women want to do stuff, want to follow their heart, and, you know, there are aspirations, but for some reason or the other, they're not able to follow them. So the idea is to inspire them, motivate them. And eventually we want to build a community of women who are there to support, help, empower, and mentor each other. So a very, very warm welcome to you to the About Her show.
Thank you so much, Sangeeta, for inviting me to your podcast. You've been very patient with me. I know we've been talking for nearly 2 months now, but I've been hit by the viral and thankfully on my path to recovery. Great. I have been, in fact, listening to your podcasts, and I have been wondering how I'm going to talk like those very, very inspiring women that you have on it.
Just like them and maybe even better.
Yeah. Better, yes.
All right. So fine. Just to kind of, you know, break the ice, tell us a little bit about your early life, your childhood. And if you think that any of your experiences from those days have left an imprint on you, or they have influenced you in following the path that you are currently following.
In today's context, Sangeeta, I'm a dinosaur. I belong to the time when women or girls were not given the sort of leverage or importance that they're given now, thank God. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I belong to a very highly educated family, and my parents and extended family were very forward-thinking people. My home was a very interesting place. In fact, if you ask me about my childhood, then it's a beautiful mix of education, of course, and something that was really surreal.
Okay.
That is my, if I think about it, I have been thinking about it ever since you've invited me. Mm-hmm. And one of the primary influences while growing up was that there is a lot to our world besides the brick and mortar that we see around us.
Yes, yes.
The other aspect, the other layer of creation or existence, something which is intangible and yet can be felt. I grew up with a very healthy regard for the universe.
Okay.
If somebody would dismiss the presence of extra-worldly, otherworldly things, I would laugh and say, how do we know? The universe is so vast and it is so difficult to understand and say with confidence and surety and I dare say, arrogance that you know everything that it has to offer. That's a bit of a funny thing, because what are we? We can only hope to understand the magic and the mystery of this world.
No.
So I want to first tell you that my grandfather was a reader in English literature. He was head of department. He was published with Keats and Rabindranath Tagore.
Wow.
His sonnets still in the courses of Rajasthan Board. My aunts were very, very well-read people. They wrote, and they were published, and they were awarded. One of my aunts got the Padma Bhushan for Hindi free verse poetry, and my mother was a double postgraduate. She wanted to be a doctor in her time. My father was educated. They came from a time when they could meet Pandit Nehru or know about Gandhi, or they were entrenched and not in, they weren't active, but they were deeply aware of the struggle for independence. My father only wore khadi from the age of 13.
All
He,
right.
in fact, spun khadi. And one of the lessons that he gave me was that it is very difficult to spin khadi because you have to have your mind and your body in the same place. Otherwise, the sooth, it breaks. You have to, into concentration. So it was that kind of a family, highly educated. The first postgraduate lady from Rajasthan. They were all from my family. And yet I remember waking up to conversations about dreams, to conversations about what did so and so see in their dream, and is it going to come true? And I never found it odd. In today's time, this could be considered to be wacko. But you'd say, what are you talking about even? But which is why I built the background that they were all highly educated people. They were, and there was no question of superstition or that kind of a thing. Like if you ask me about religion or about God, I have a God, but there was nothing enforced upon me. We belong to the Vaishnav Oswal community, Marwaris, but I called my father Appu. And it's
Interesting.
a very interesting topic of conversation even now, because when people see the name, they ask me, but when you call your dad Abba, Abu, but it was all okay. We lived in this, the childhood I remember was fascinating. It was it opened my mind a great deal to the possible. To the possibilities, and I dare say it really helped me later in life in a lot of ways.
See, it is true, isn't it, that it is your childhood which builds the foundation. And if that foundation is strong, obviously the building that you build on it, your future is going to be strong as well. So yeah, a cultured, educated family, definitely. I'm sure. So that is, of course, when we talk further and unravel what you do. So obviously that had a bearing on it. So tell me, Ruchira, when you were growing up, did you ever dream about wanting to become something when you grew up? Like, was there any profession that you were attracted to, anything that you saw, any women around you doing which you thought that I want to do as well? Was there anything like that?
Like I said, I'm a dinosaur, Sangeeta. I think in my time, we didn't really dream of a profession. The sort of work that girls did, and girls from small towns. I grew up in a very small town of Uttar Pradesh. There wasn't much to aspire to, and You could become a very good teacher in a school. It was a profession that sort of would help you balance your responsibilities at home because you'd come back half day and then look after your children or look after whatever. I didn't want to do that simply because I thought that waking up in the morning at 5 o'clock and rushing to school wasn't something that I was interested in, even at that age. But I was an utter romantic. I grew up on a diet of Barbara Cartland's and Georgette Air's and Mills and Boon. And I remember still, and I wonder where those evenings have gone, going up to the roof and enjoying the breeze and sort of imagining this Prithviraj Chauhan who would come, riding his stallion and take me away to this magical world. Where I thought I would be independent. I would have more independence with the support of this gorgeous creature who would sort of that is what we did. I and since I was I would devour books. I would read a book a day, perhaps 1.5 books a day. I built this whole world for myself, and I thought that someday I'm going to achieve it. There was the time when I wanted to be a doctor, but I'm certain in retrospect it is because I read too many Robin Cooks, and I thought that being a doctor was something really glamorous and fantastic. Later, when I came to class 11, and I had to make a choice of a subject, my father told me that I'm a bright girl and I should take up science. And he played to my mind because he said, if you understand a concept in science, it's not very hard work. He knew that I was not, shall I say, a very diligent student. I did well. He said, if you just understand a concept, then it's like a piece of cake. So I took science in class 12 for ISC board, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Luckily for me, my father realized that Agra wasn't the place for me. I grew up in Agra, and he sent me to Delhi University, where I studied English literature. I did honors in literature, and that is when I found my Meteor. That was my world. I enjoyed every single day of my classes. I still didn't have a plan. I still thought I'd live a life of marriage and pedicures and manicures and being a society person and have my children and just that. I didn't have a plan even then. It was only after I got married, immediately after my graduation, and a couple of years passed, that I realized that my mind was racing away and I had to do something. I needed to work in some way. But back then, we were married to conventional families. They didn't look. They didn't take very well to women working. So, and then what did I have to fall back on? I was a graduate, albeit from a very good university. I had done well in my studies. I had a good background. I was the head girl of my school and all that. But how much does that count in the job environment?
True.
But my mind was hungry. Those days there wasn't any internet, there wasn't any I would read everything I could get my hands on, my newspapers, conversations with people. I would listen in, try and understand what was happening in the world, read all about self-motivation. I needed to do a hell of a lot of that. Generally empower myself with whatever I got around me. My mind was constantly absorbing, constantly. But what held me in great stead was the fact that I could speak the English language. Even now, smaller towns, if you're able to speak properly, you do get a foot in the door.
You do.
And there was this lady who, it's interesting because the world that I'm exposing you to is possibly not the world that the other ladies on your podcast have seen.
Yes,
It's
probably.
a world that doesn't belong to the metro cities. It's a world that belongs still to what a large part of India is.
Yes.
So I was dragged out of the house by this lady who loved me a lot and thought I had great potential. And she sent me to, lo and behold, a school. Something that I had resisted a lot. You know, I didn't want to. But she thought I was worth it, and she said that I should just go for 2 hours a day and work and do something with myself. I mean, I can't be it wasn't right for me to be rusting away at home. So that was my first foray into work. But the way I'm built, once I begin to think of work or that I know that I have to work, I always had plan A, B, C, D in mind. And that little stint sort of took away the what shall I say, the hitch in my mind about stepping working. I didn't step out so much, but I did a lot of things, Sangeeta.
All right.
I used to wear sari always. We had to cover our head. So I turned that into a fashion statement quite literally, because I believe that if there is something that I have to do, if there is something I can't get rid of, I might as well make friends with it and do it with style and with joy. So I used to only wear saris, and the people in town admired it, admired the way I wore my drapes, and I started sari draping classes. So I did that for some time, and I had clients, and I charged quite a lot of money, and yet they came. So that went on for some time. Plan A, B, C, it's all leading up somewhere. I did so many other things, but once this lady came to me with the plan of selling some cosmetics. She said, "You can do it. You are in the right circles, that they were expensive cosmetics, and you speak well, and you know all the everything. Try it." As if I didn't have to step out of the house much. I had two small children, and it was just about a monthly meeting in Delhi somewhere, and I said, "Fine, let me try it." And I started to sell those cosmetics till somebody asked me, "Ruchira, I see in your brochure there is a cream and there are some things that help you make f become fair. So how are you selling this? And what about, have you tried it?" And I'm a dusky girl, and that's where that put a complete stop to that phase of my life. But
I'm sure.
I learned about marketing. I learned about creating a need, about selling a product. And it led me to another marketing company. So all this work is work that I can do without upsetting the home, without, and it wasn't bringing me much money, but it was keeping me very occupied. And I'm certain that it was feeding my mind.
Yes, of course.
I was one thing led to another, and I joined this company that sold books.
Oh, okay.
And there were these really expensive book sets. I mean, at that time, if I see how, if it turned into money today, some sets were for 50,000 rupees, some sets were for 60,000 rupees. But I joined that company, and what I value the most in that from that particular experience is the training I got. I went a couple of times, three, four times, and my mind is a sponge. It absorbs. That training was fantastic. It was like very, very good. But I couldn't continue with that also because of responsibilities at home and because of a friend, somebody approached me to sell this European airline. And she said, you can talk on the phone, and this is the way it's to be done. And the people that I was talking to were the CEOs of really top-notch companies, say Rolls-Royce or here and there. And again, the training really helped me. They had this day-long training session with O&M, Ogilvy and Mather. And I came back with my eyes open that there's so much. So there's this girl who from one small town went to Delhi University, but immediately went back to a very small town, but kept coming back to the city and kept herself very open to information and knowledge. Time passed, and now my children were also older. I got this offer to run a polytechnic. I'm still working on the dint of the fact that I am confident and that I can speak well. I'm not afraid of, I don't get cold feet. And that's what attracts people to me and asks and makes them offer me work. In this polytechnic, I had a large table, large office. I was, running it, so to speak. It was quite interesting. And when the gentleman asked me, what kind of a salary I expect, I said it has to be something that I can take back home to my father-in-law and not feel that it's very small because I belong to a prosperous family. And also, I want to have my car parked inside the campus. I'm not going to walk from there. I used to drive a car. So they agreed, and I started working. I began to work with people from the lower strata of society, economically weak people. So I used to go to this area called the Seva Nagar. The Seva Nagar is where, our helpers, cleaners, they all stay. Very modest homes. That was an experience that I hold very close to my heart. So we'd bring these girls, convince the parents to give them vocational education, and bring them to the polytechnic and teach them. We were affiliated to the NIOS. That's where I also added some courses to my education. I did some, I padded up my resume, so to speak. I realized that what was really lacking in the girls and the women was confidence. So I started something called personality development. This I'm talking about the late mid 90s. So personality development was it's a it's a was a new term then. It was just picking up. But what I did was I tried to make the girls feel comfortable in their own skin and also teach them in my classes about very basic things about the country, about the states, about how the government works, about so that they felt knowledgeable and they didn't feel that they are absolutely at sea about everything. That also motivated them. Now, I wasn't trained to motivate anybody. Whatever I had was what I was doing for myself and what I was reading. So here I was in a class of 40 girls, some of the girls older than 45 years, the students, and telling them that they can plow through life with an attitude of confidence, hope, positivity. It was a very rewarding phase of my life. I remember that the girls began to believe that I had an answer for everything. And there were many stories of victory, many stories. Many girls would come back to me and say that, we did this. You'll be amused, Sangeeta, but in the smaller towns, small things really matter. So I would take the girls down to my car and tell them how to open the door, sit inside, and not feel afraid of it, because it was a car, to tell them that as humans, they were far more powerful than any computer, any machine, and they needn't ever feel small. So, because you know how it is, when you haven't sat in a car, you begin to fumble.
Yes, of course.
And you become even more embarrassed. And you don't know how to ask for help, because you feel if you ask for help, you're going to become smaller. So I did a lot of that stuff with them. I took them to huge shops and I told them how to deal with the person behind the counter and not be afraid of somebody who's talking to them in the English language and all that stuff. Well, it was beautiful. Till this student of mine, very unfortunately, lost her husband.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it was the most brilliant love story, and we were all taken in by it. And he passed away in an accident. So when we heard, we all went to her home. And there was this sea of people clad in white sitting over there. And I was terribly disturbed by what was happening. And I remember she got up from where she was sitting and she said, "Ma'am is here and she will tell me, give me the answers to this."
Oh, okay.
My knees became weak. And there was this colleague next to me who helped me sit down. And that is when I realized that the water was over my head. It was something to do this optimism, positivity, you can do anything game. But there were so many questions which were far deeper and which I had no answers to. And more importantly, I wasn't trained to do it. I was so I pared down those classes. I went on to teach at some management institutes where I taught basic etiquette and things like that. Meanwhile, a friend of mine offered that this is the time when youth really needs to be exposed to the world. All the multinationals are coming into the country. And our children are uncomfortable because they don't understand different cuisines. They don't understand how to pair their drinks with what. And they come across like they are from the village. And let us do something where we can train them to tackle corporate world. So we started an institute called Perfect Profile. And we did this for a couple of years, I mean, 1.5 years. Again, I had to close it down because somebody fell very severely ill in my family. I'm going to stop here and go back to my second year of college. In my second year of college, a tarot reader, a highly accomplished tarot reader, who was also my elder sister, my cousin, gave me a pack of cards. This was in 1984. And she said, "I see it in you, you should try." And those were the times when, again, there was no internet, there was no information. So the tarot cards stayed with me throughout, and I kept reading for myself, doing things with them, generally playing, getting to know them better. Studying English literature helped because English literature is all about symbolism, it's all about mythology, and I was able to sort of, add to my knowledge there. And that was one phase of my life. When I began to teach at the management institutes, I used to go for single classes, and I was doing very well. I was doing very, very well in that. One of the institutes offered me a job, and the paycheck was so hefty, but the lady had a lot of faith in me. I worked there for 3 months and I realized I wasn't doing justice. So I went to her office and I told her, look, I feel very guilty. She said, you're the strangest person I've met. You're saying you won't do this work. I'm not complaining. I said, no, I feel taking advantage. I can't do it. And I left it. In retrospect, I feel that the influence that my father had on me has a great deal to do with my relationship with money. My father was a very noble man. Very noble man. The way I saw him was that he could never ask for even what was due to him. It was, that generation that thought talking about money is not good. That time. And only lately a friend of mine asked me that, you have to work on your relationship with money. Because I still, my tongue gets tied in multiple knots when I have to even ask for my or tell somebody what my fee is when I'm reading the tarot cards or doing other work. And I have to knock some sense back into myself because I know that while it is noble, it is not practical.
It is not practical. That's right.
So my father has been my compass. I would look at him and I would know whether I was doing the right thing or not. And we lost him in 21 to the pandemic. I keep hoping that he's left his compass inside me somewhere
That's all he
so
had.
that I continue to live a life that is honest and upright.
But I'm
So
sure because, the foundation, like I said, if it is strong and, it is kind of going to build a building on it, which is going to be strong. So there is no way. And I think that since you've lived a large part of your life living by his principles and what he left behind in terms of what you imbibed from him, I don't think that's going to go anywhere. But Ruchira, what a plethora of experiences. I mean, how much, and what I understand is that, it's always been as though the world has been your oyster. You've not only kind of sought opportunities, but opportunities have come to you. People have given them to you, and you've had these amazing experiences, which obviously have enriched you as a person. Because you see, the more you meet people, and especially different kinds of people, and the experiences that you have with those people, obviously they make you a better person. And I mean, how should I say, an enriched person who understands the world and understands people. So yeah, extremely. I mean, I am like amazed, and I am like, I have no words, I mean, it has absolutely been amazing listening to your journey.
So while telling you this, Sangeeta, in 1999, I read the cards for somebody, a dear, dear friend of mine. And the readings that I got were so remarkable and unbelievable that she took a stick to me. She said, I mean, how dare you not read for others? So 1984 to 99, because I always felt that to read the tarot for somebody else was a very, very big responsibility.
Yes, of
I mean,
course.
tell them about their life, about whether a marriage will work or not, or whether work will go on or not, and things like that. I used to read the cards for another cousin of mine, a very, very dear cousin, and she was taken in and fired her imagination. She loves me a lot. So she dragged me to this news organization. And she said, you have to give her a tarot show.
Okay.
Now, the chairman was, she was a lady. She was very well known to her, and she couldn't turn her down. And now my children are grown up. They're in the 11th and 12th, So I found myself in the studio and doing a rotten job because it was a show in Hindi. And all I'd done all my life was try and speak in English. But she was insistent. And also, I have this personality. I wear saris, I wear a bindi, I wear silver jewelry. I don't wear Western clothes. And they were looking for somebody who had this glam quotient and who was not like a lot of people called me back then, jhola type NGO, the khadi kurta and the kajal. So that's the Delhi University influence and my own personality. So I go to the studio, I try very hard, and they are only testing me and training me and all that. And one day when I go to the makeup area for my makeup to go and practice, I see this gorgeous girl, blonde hair and wearing amazingly modern and sec good looking outfit. I knew that they'd found somebody who was more worthy of their channel and what they wanted. And I was glad for it because it wasn't something that I ever thought I'd do or was cut out. And very happily, I went home. And I spoke to a friend later. I said, I'm so happy that I'm not dependent on the way I look. Or what I wear, I have far more substance than that. And it's okay if somebody else who's younger, who's, remember, fair and dark was and is a big thing.
Yes, it is. It is.
But I am super lucky that I've been totally pampered by my family and never made to feel in any way short of what society requires. Though I have to say that when I got married into a Baniya family, it was always the but that she's very nice looking, but she's dark, so that's always there. But I have thick skin, and then I had the padding from my mother and my father and my aunts and uncles who doted on me, and I was very happy with the way I looked.
As one should
Didn't break. It didn't break me. I was happy. And I went on to write for that channel, the website, for 1 year. I used to write the tarot readings for them. Lo and behold, I got a meeting with Zee News. Somehow happened. My memory is hazy about exactly how I landed up there. But luckily for me, when I went for the audition, I had so much training from my last experience that it was a lark. I handled it very well, and I knew that this was very easy to do now. I had polished up speaking in Hindi, and but I can speak in Hindi very well. It's I read Hindi. I in fact, my mother taught us to read Sanskrit at a time. I'm talking about how you study in a convent school, then a college, and you begin to think in English.
Yes, you
And
do.
that's the problem. So then I told the editor, the chief editor at the channel, that look, I'm not going to wear those funny clothes or dress like a witch because I'm doing the tarot cards. I'm going to wear my saris and I'm going to wear my beanie. And if that's acceptable, it's fine. I have a daughter, and my daughter has to be married off. And nobody should say, ki, oh my God, but a mother on TV used to look like a fatal sight. So they liked the idea. And I went on to do a show for about 4.5 years. I was very fortunate that it wasn't my bread and butter and that I did it. I enjoyed it. I got paid for it. And after about 4.5 years, there is only so much you can reinvent yourself for television.
I'm sure.
It is the same sort of reading, and the show that I left the show then. I have no idea if it continued or what happened, but I then left the show. But a fabulous 4.5 years. Now, I could have very easily set up shop. I was on national, international television every day for so many years, but my heart wasn't allowing me to do that. I always felt that anybody who comes to you for a reading comes to you when they're miserable, worried, or
Yeah, anxious about
and
things.
as long as you can, you have food on the table, there is no need to earn money through this. My father, this is all my father speaking
I
through.
can see the connection.
I had a literal halo around my head that keeps bobbing up and down. So I could have set up shop.
Yeah, of
You know,
course.
I had huge exposure, but I didn't. I had clients. I have regular clients who've been with me for 10, 12, 13 years, but I don't market my tarot so much. Then I moved to Delhi. From this town, I moved to Delhi. I was in Ghaziabad. I moved to Delhi. And again, I was looking for work. My entire attitude has been that there is always something you can do.
Yes, I
There
agree.
is always an alternative that you can find. As long as you're willing to roll up your sleeves and go for it, you can. I have never shied away from asking for help. I have asked for help with, and I feel that I can do it because I ask for help with complete honesty. If I get it, great. If I don't get it, it doesn't hurt me. I feel I've tried. Imagine the sorrow of thinking that I wish I had tried. So I will try. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, koi baat nahi. There is something else to always. So another friend said, gave me some work to do in writing. And I wrote a couple of articles. And when the articles came back to me, Sangeeta, I remember sitting with my mother and sobbing because they were so badly criticized.
Oh my God. Oh
There
my.
were so many mistakes. And here I was thinking I was the cat's whiskers. Because, but I'd never realized that I was what they call a frog in a pond. So here I go again, learning, learning, relearning. I rushed to my social media. I deleted everything I had written because I could see that it was so substandard. But I worked on it. See, and I knew that why this had happened to me because I had had a rigorous training in the language. You know, I had studied in the best school. I had gone to one of the best colleges. I had done the best course. But I'd worked in a largely Hindi-speaking belt where, explain, I used to be translating. And that ruined the whole thing. So I went back to the drawing board and I learned. And in 2013, I did something that is very, very close to my heart. I began to work with fiction. And we started this publishing house. It's called Quill Club Writers. We had an experience with publishing and we realized that you could be anyone, but it is very difficult to get a foot in the door of the publishing world. You either have to be very good at what you're doing, or very lucky, or you have to have solid contacts.
I know.
And the editors are inundated with submissions.
Of course, yes.
I mean, they can't read all of them. And so often it's possible that your submission could just go into the slush pile, never be read. So we said, let's publish, but let's do it another way. Instead of the writer coming to us with his submission, his manuscript, let us seek talent. So again, I told you I asked for help. I asked for help, and somebody, a very dear relative of mine, said that I could work with her school. And we decided to work with schools because we also knew that children have the best stories.
Yeah, they do.
One of the things that you hear, bachpan mein ki kahani mat sunao, itti. Tell us. So we began this publishing house. What we do essentially is we select talented writers from schools. We mentor them. We publish them. And then the beauty is that the books become readers in the school.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful.
Suppose we make a book with the, say, Mayo College or any XYZ school. The book that's made over there is read by the students.
Okay, great. So
So
great
I've been
source of
doing this.
inspiration.
Yes. Yeah, it's remarkable. It's kept us going and very motivated, and meeting and talking to children and listening to how their mind works is like something else.
I'm sure.
Another experience altogether. Right. So that is my work trajectory, and I'm sure I've missed out lots in the
Well, it's been quite an incredible journey. But tell me,
Yes, it has.
Ruchira, in this journey that you've had where you've experienced so many different kinds of work options, tell me, of course, apart from the challenges which you may have faced, with transitioning from one to the other, but did you ever feel that some of those challenges were because of your gender? Because you were a woman out there, or they could have been faced by anyone?
Sangeeta, my generation was, and especially living in a small town with, we very wary of, I was very wary of working in the big world. All the work that I had done till then, up till the time that I came to Delhi, was all very, it was good work, but it was also perfect for a woman, dealing with girls, working in colleges. You have a show on Zee. Fine, it's all nothing where I had to really deal with men. In fact, I think that my experience at Zee was very nice. They were extremely respectful and kind to me, very kind. But the corporate world was a different ball game. So when I came to Delhi, I don't think I had the confidence. Confidence to, or the wherewithal to deal with a corporate outfit. I did get, like I told you, I always asked, and I did get work offers. I preferred to work from home. That was the small town girl in me, you know, that I want to be very, very safe, and I want to just, you know, hide in my thing and work, even though I've been on TV.
But yes, I understand.
Dream, but yeah. So no, not in the work. In fact, women are welcomed. They are known for their gentle touch plus the wisdom in everything they do. There is nobody like a woman to tell you how to gently mold your mind, or to mold your thoughts, or to who can help you understand the romance of fiction or the beauty of life. There's nobody like a woman for that.
I agree.
So I have never faced a problem in that sense at all.
That's wonderful to know. So tell me, you're helping these young minds to write, and then you're helping them publish their works. So this is a quick one. Just three tips for someone who wants to get their work published. What would you advise them to do?
You have to be very good. And you have to, one, write consistently, which means that you have to set a target for yourself, even if it's 100 words a day. You can't let. If you want to make a career in writing, then you have to be prepared for some knocks. But you are not to give up. I also always like that my students pursue a regular sort of a career stream also. Because it takes a very long time for writing to pay. It does, but it can take time. And there was this child that I worked with, Sangeeta. She was an engineer in second year. And she wrote a story with us. And then she told her father that this is my heart's desire. I've done engineering because of you, but now I want to write. So we told her that this is all very fine, but your father shouldn't come after us with a stick. So she got a job, a wonderful job, and she began to write. After 2 years, she decided to pursue her master's in engineering. And she applied to all the Ivy League colleges. And this story is on our website. The girl is on our website. She was interviewed for 45 minutes by the admission officer at Cornell. And all the officer spoke to her about was her story. He said, you know, I know your marks. I know what else have you done? What else do you do? So those are the victories that we've had. And in, she'd written a story on the immigration crisis, and the officer was an Israeli lady. So you can imagine how it hit off. And that's all I spoke about. So a lot of our students get admission abroad when if they want to. And the Indian government also gives a lot of advantage to published children, children who publish, to get to university. You can go under the extracurricular activities section, and you can get an advantage with your admission.
So it's saying that write regularly. You should have some other, you know, I mean, say occupation, which kind of
fall
lets
back.
Fall back on. And what is the third one?
And I said, write regularly, have a fallback, and be good.
Be good. That's
so, which means you have to find a mentor, somebody who can read your work, give you critical feedback, take it, run with it. Read a lot. Just those things. Very basic.
Very basic. But to be remembered. So Ruchira, in a normal day, of course, you know, we have our work to do and our, you know, regular mundane stuff to do, but not every day is the same. You know, there are days when we are down and out and not really feeling very happy and cheerful. So on those kind of days, how do you kind of stay the course and how do you kind of lift yourself up?
When I was doing the motivation classes in the polytechnic that I spoke about, every class that I do was also a class for myself. And since I'm a romantic and I believe in this wonderful wizardry of the universe, I've always lived believing there was something beautiful around the corner. So there is something beautiful around the corner. And that's how I also, when there is something that I can't handle, that you can't handle, then you have to give it up to the universe. Say, I've tried my best. I'm not able to go any further. Help me. I know you're on my side. And once you've done that, don't doubt it. Once you've given it up to God, to whoever you pray to the cosmos, then believe in it. Because you can't pray and then worry.
True. So stay positive and believe that something good will come out of whatever is happening and believe in what the universe is doing for you.
Yes, Sangeeta. And just one more thing I want to add over here. Why optimism is the only way to live. There's the option between being sad and pulled down. Or being uplifted and doing your best, taking one step after the other. But you have to also use your mind. Sometimes you can be over optimistic and go down a rabbit hole.
That's true.
So you have to know when to stop and when to change tack. But when you change that tack, Do it with the same belief, with
Hmm.
the same enthusiasm, with the same sense of purpose,
Yes.
and move ahead. So
Very well.
it is important. Improve your relationship with money.
Yeah.
Money is not dirty. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It is. It's important to. It's only asking for your worth in today's world. You either do something for somebody because you love them, but how many people can you love like that?
Yes,
And
yes.
the other
But
people,
to
when
love
you do
yourself.
something,
You.
love yourself.
Yes. True, true, true.
Have to love yourself
Yeah.
like that.
So tell me, if we look around us, while of course there are things like gender bias and gender discrimination, all those things are there. But despite that, we see a lot of women who are doing so well for themselves, you know, following their hearts, their aspirations and ambition, and reaching the top of, you know, wherever they are. So how do you think the world takes to such women and in today's day and age? And when I say the world, I mean both men and women. How do they react to women who've done well for themselves?
I think I'm so blessed to be living in a time where I've seen this dire contrast between how women and their careers were treated, say, some 30 years ago to now.
Yeah.
I feel it's, women have come of age, especially in big towns and big cities. They're admired.
Yes.
They're admired. In the smaller towns and cities, there is also a great explosion of awareness, but a lot of work has to be done.
Yes, of course. We have
In
miles to go, definitely. But yes, you know, if it looks good and if you feel that, yes, you know, it's happening the right way, then you feel positive about the future as well. But of course, having said that, we do have miles to go. Okay.
Look.
So, you know, life has a way of, you know, making us go through different experiences, with each experience teaching us something, good, bad, ugly, whatever. So, but all those experiences, like I said, they teach you something. There are some lessons to be learned from those experiences. So, would you like to share some of those or any of those experiences that you may have had?
There's something I want to tell all girls, and I feel that it is, we are born with this sense of responsibility. I think because we are going to tomorrow bear children or have families, however much you become a feminist, the truth is that you are going to be the one who's going to do that heavy lugging. I don't know what it is genetically or something. We are very protective of our parents. We are all very protective about what we tell them about how our life is going. Or one of the biggest lessons I learned was that I shouldn't have ever parented my parents. I was always hesitant because I felt it was a, you know, when I was in trouble of some sort or whatever, what will my father, how, not what he will think about me, but that he will be heartbroken, or that he will be sad. What will my, how will my mother take it? So my mother is a rock star. She's like a complete rock star. But how will she take it? And I can't hurt them. But when a time came and I did speak with them, I was astounded. I said, what have I done? I have tried to parent my parents when and forgetting that they are far more evolved. They have so much wisdom and they are my parents for a reason. Like I'm parents to my children. And I hope that my children will always speak to me and never try and protect me from knocks, you know,
Yes.
and that it is never the end of the world. Never.
That's true. There is
There's
always something
always
to look forward.
something to do. So don't parent your parents, please. I mean, find somebody who you can talk to and speak about everything that's going on in your life, your ups and downs. And even if you get a scolding, take it in the right spirit. So that is something that I feel very firmly. One big lesson that I have learned
Okay.
that
And you would.
the second thing that I want to say is take your studies seriously.
Yes.
The most important part of your life is when you're in school and college. You really don't have any responsibility then. Save, go from class to class. Give it the best shot. Because that time will never come back. So
True.
study, read, and yeah, make a difference. Just go out there.
Yes.
There. I'm sort of biting my tongue because some words come to mind which may not be appropriate for a podcast.
Okay, so tell me, when you're sharing these tips and these lessons with largely the girls, where would you place financial independence and emotional independence for them? I mean, how do you rate it? I mean, how important do you think it is for girls to be financially and emotionally independent?
So financial independence is very important. There's absolutely no two ways about it, especially in today's time. 30 years ago was a different matter altogether. Now, every girl should be financially independent. In fact, I feel that, society spends so much money on marriages and this and that, but what they should actually do is just give their daughter a nest egg. There's that security. She doesn't stay anywhere because she doesn't have the money to do something else. She should have just enough to give her that padding and that cushioning. So money is very, very important. So financial importance, yes. Emotional understanding also. There is a lot being said these days, Sangeeta, in this new world about loving yourself, about flaunting your talent or your thing. So, being very old school, I may sometimes feel that don't be immodest. Let the other person also discover your talent or your qualities or what your skill is. People will say that no, you have to tell them. So there's this antardwand in my mind right now while I'm even speaking this, because I know it is very important to also talk about what you can do. And perhaps that is where we lacked in our growing up years. But yes, look after yourself. So in my life, my prayer would be that everybody should be okay. And if everybody is okay, I'll be okay. I'm strong. I'll be okay. But the prayer should be that you also need to be okay. Because if you're okay, then you'll help everybody be okay. So there was this huge sacrificial air about the women in my time, Tuck your sari in and get to work in the kitchen, kind of a thing. I'm very glad that today's girls don't think like that.
Yes, they
I
don't.
have a daughter who's a mother of two, and I have a niece. I have a niece. I learn so much from them. I learn so much from my daughter-in-law. It's like, my mind is a sponge. I hope it will continue to absorb till I, cross over. But there is a great deal to learn from this generation.
Yes, there is. I agree with you.
Yes. Don't lose your softness. Don't lose your kindness. Don't lose your femininity. It is beautiful to be a woman.
It is. I agree.
And love yourself and go for yourself and make yourself successful and secure in every way possible.
That is very important. Like, you have to preserve yourself, but without losing those finer touches which, bring that, which make you different from the other gender. So don't lose that in whatever you're doing. Ruchira, juggling different roles, I think, comes naturally to women for some reason. But having said that, we also know that it is sometimes a struggle. It's not always easy to do that. How do you manage that in your life?
Currently in my life, since my children are all grown up and my grandchildren don't live with me, I don't have to do a lot of mothering except long phone calls or boosting them up or talking to them when they are that kind of mothering. But it's by and large my work. I took up painting some 4 or 5 years ago. So I paint, I read the tarot, I began to do recordings for Instagram reels. I have to begin again, but I get sometimes get stuck in family and health and those kind of things. But I'll be very honest, if I say that I can't juggle, it's because of myself. I think you can. And like my mother always said, that make friends with what you can't avoid. And I used to tell the girls in my class from Sevanagar, I used to say, beta, if there's a basin full of utensils, it's not going to go away. You have to clean them. So put on your radio, get yourself a Nimbu Pani or a Fanta, blast the music, and make friends with it. Do it. Do it happily. There's something that you simply have to do. Do it happily. Of
Meditate.
course, journaling, making lists, and all the things that everybody speaks about help.
Yeah. But
I
yes.
haven't learned to journal as yet, but I know my children do.
Okay.
And
But
they
if
find it very useful.
I mean, what you have to do it, you have to do it. Just kind of, I think, just catch the bull by the horns and just be done with it. Yeah.
Depends, because if you're going to do it sulking, then you're going to be unhappy. You'll get wrinkles on your face. You'll So you might as well just do it
Do it
and
happily.
do
Okay.
it.
So tell me, a lot of people nowadays have taken to, adopting different kinds of other professions. By when I say other, I mean that which is different from what they had been doing for, say, a number of years. So especially, we notice this when people are there, in their mid-40s, late-40s, early-50s. They now started doing other things, like somebody's taking to writing, painting, hiking, biking, whatever. So why do you think we are seeing so much of this in today's day and age? And why did not we see it earlier?
I think the world has come of age. I think there's an explosion of opportunity. Where was it before? There now, and that is the time when you sit back and think that, I did so many things, perhaps because my parents wanted me to, or circumstances were such that I could only do this and not anything else. But now that I'm 40, it's the most beautiful part of your life.
That's true.
You're sort of settled, and it's a springboard into this world of possibility and opportunity. Social media, my God,
I agree. Yes.
the talents that burgeoning there. Of course, social media is a scourge. It's very bad. It can get to you and rule your life. But if you look at the right places, you will see, where were these girls before?
Yeah, I
Look
agree.
at what they're doing. So it's great. I think that is why. The only reason is that there is tremendous opportunity now.
Yes, a lot of
And
awareness.
if you are able to do what I did, roll up your sleeves and look for the next opportunity, it's great.
So where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Oh. When I moved to Delhi, I had attended this hypnosis session. It was a training session where the person who was conducting us put us in this little trance and asked us where we see ourselves 5 years hence. And the purpose of the exercise was that if the vision that you see is very different from your current situation, you see any paths leading up to that vision. And my vision was beautiful, but I saw no paths leading up to it, which is why I moved to Delhi. And to tell you where I see myself 10 years from now, Sangeeta, I'll have to go into another hypnosis session to visualize myself.
All right.
But But now, at this stage of my life, I want to complete the book that I've been working on for very long. And I look forward to my grandchildren. I look forward to my children. I continue to be a total romantic. I want to write poetry. I want to continue to write poetry and paint. And I want to basically soak in the beauty of this world. So
Wonderful.
I will continue to work, I think. My sisters say, I have two sisters younger to me. And in one voice, they say that, Didi, we never see you stop working. You will always be doing something or the other. So
Great.
that's how it's
That's
going to be.
wonderful. That's wonderful.
And I hope so it's been 10 years since I've been doing this, since I've had this publishing house. So I think it's here to stay.
Yes, of course.
It's something that I have, this is the longest I've been, I've developed and built something. I have a wonderful partner. He very, very accomplished person. So I want to take Quill Club writers far and wide. We've mentored 3,000 children so far, and I want to make it more and really take this to the corners of India and teach the children how to look at life with wonder and write stories about that wonder
Lovely.
and
So all the
beautiful.
best to you.
Thank you. It was lovely talking to you. I don't know how time flew.
Yes, even I mean, it's like amazing how, because I guess, you connect at some level and then you would just kind of, stay there. So tell me, last and final question. Can a woman have it all?
I think a woman can have it all. Absolutely. Women have more than men in a very esoteric sense, in a very philosophical sense. The very fact that they are the mothers, that is just the women can have it all.
I agree. I actually agree
That's
with
what
you. As
I want to.
long as they
I don't
know
want to
what
go into that. Yeah, because then the romantic in me will start talking again.
their all is.
Women can have it all.
Sure. As long as they know what their all is, I'm sure they can have.
Yes. So this is one poem, Sangeeta, small. It's the poet is unknown, but it stuck with me all my life. And it says, you were asking me about women having it all. It's in Hindi. It says, कफन बांध के सर पे अपने निकली जब वो लक्ष्य भेद ने सांस रोक ली जड़ चेतन ने लगी धरा भी उसे देखने अबला नहीं बनी वो सबला
वाह
मजबूती ले पांव में विद्या विनय विवेक की पहुंची जब वो ठंडी छांव में
That's
बेसिकली
incredible,
दिया.
incredible.
So then she decides and she ties that muraita around her head and she
Okay.
goes. The earth stops and stares. Nature stops and stares. The wind stops. And she reaches this beautiful shade, nurturing shade of Vidya, that is knowledge,
Yes.
Vinay, good character and good attitude, behavior, and
Yes.
Vivek, intelligence. And then she's not an abla.
No, no longer. No longer.
No,
How
no.
wonderful, Ruchira. What a beautiful interaction with you. I mean, this conversation
Thank you
has
so
been, I
much.
think, one of the best I've ever had. Thank you so
Thank
much for being on the show. It was an
Thank
absolute
you, Sita.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the About Her show. We've had some interesting conversations with accomplished women on our other episodes, so make sure to check them out. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Follow About Her on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And visit our website www.abouther.in for some wonderful content. And if you know of a trailblazing woman who you think would be a great guest on our show, please write to us at web.abouther@gmail.com.